Okay, so we just kind of started out, and forgive me for the fits and starts that we've had with this class. We lost internet, and then I got disabled briefly, and was not able to be here. And then Kim and I traveled one week, so it just seems like we've had a hard time getting this class going. But the first week we talked about how God expects us to be bearing fruit. And it's important for us to realize that God didn't save us just so that we could consider ourselves saved. God has work for us to do, and that's to bear fruit for Him. And then last week, the last time we were together, we talked about what fruit is, and that was a very general look at fruit. And the point that I was trying to make is that the fruit that we bear is our fruit. It's not the fruit that the church bears. It's not the fruit that we have that comes from reaching out and helping other people come to know Jesus, although that's fruit, and we're going to talk about a little bit about that. But basically, the fruit that God wants us to bear is He wants our lives to be better. And so tonight we're going to begin to talk about some specifics. And tonight we're going to talk about bearing fruit by helping those who are in need, or by sharing with those who are in need. And the early church did this a lot. So we're going to read about what the early church did, and I've noted several of these passages. So let's read through these and see what we can draw from each of these passages. So we'll start with Romans, the 15th chapter. And I would just mention, if you're reading along on the papers that you have, or if you're reading on the screen here, I outlined this or highlighted this idea that what we're talking about is fruit bearing when we're talking about this. So it's an interesting, really interesting word, and we defined it last week, but I want to read this week and just point out that this is something that is within that fruit bearing context. So who wants to read Romans 15, 22 through 28?
I'll read it. For which cause also I have been much hindered from coming to you, but now having no more place in these parts, and having a great desire these many years to come unto you, whensoever I take my journey into Spain, I will come to you, for I trust to see you in my journey, and to be brought on my way thitherward by you, if first I be somewhat filled with your company. But now I go unto Jerusalem to minister unto the saints, for it hath pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. It has pleased them verily, and their debtors they are. For if the Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister unto them in carnal things. When therefore I have performed this and sealed for them this fruit, I will come by you into Spain.
Okay, so this is Paul writing, and he's writing to the Roman church. What was the occasion for them deciding to send this contribution to Jerusalem? Was it just because they were Jews and they wanted to support Jews? Or was it something else?
They were poor.
Okay, they were poor.
They needed help.
What occasioned this? Because the Christians in Jerusalem were, in many ways, just in the overall, no more poor than anybody else.
I don't understand your question.
Well, what, was there a specific thing that caused them to take up this contribution for the saints of Jerusalem?
Well, was it the famine?
And, okay.
And so he was on this ministry to do that. So Paul's ministry was to collect funds to help them because they were poor and they were suffering from a famine.
Right.
And so this is sort of a part of all of that big effort.
Okay. So historically, we know that there was a famine that occurred about this time.
Uh-huh.
And because of that famine, it hit Jerusalem really hard. Partly because Jerusalem is a big city, and they were not an agrarian area, and partly because they were having difficulty with just finding the funds to get food as well. Okay? So this is not uncommon in the ancient world that you would have famine in different areas. And we still have famines today. They occur occasionally. The last great famine that really hit hard was in Ethiopia. And a lot of people suffered because of that Ethiopian famine. And a lot of Christians contributed to, you know, trying to help with the needs in Ethiopia. So basically what they were doing was they were taking up funds and they were sending it to Jerusalem with Paul. He was kind of traveling, and so they're sending the funds to Jerusalem with Paul.
That's what I was going to say. Isn't that where Paul gathered it all and took it? Isn't that where Paul gathered it all and took it to them?
Yeah. But so Paul is, he is making this journey, and of course he's preaching as he goes, and he's doing some other things as he goes, but all along the way he's been gathering funds, and he's eventually going to wind up in Jerusalem.
And here he's telling them, he's writing to the Romans and saying, I'm going to pass by here on my way to Spain, pass by Rome, and I can pick up your contribution. The Macedonians have already contributed, as well as the people in Achaia.
Right.
And I've collected those funds, and I can collect your funds as well.
Right. And it just makes sense that Paul is traveling and they're going to send the money with him. Mm-hmm. That was the most secure way to send money. You wouldn't be worthwhile to tell Paul, I've got an ox, I'm going to donate my ox, so you drive my ox all the way to Jerusalem. So in the interest of efficiency, I think they sold stuff, put money together, and sent money to Jerusalem.
We find that today, too. It's really funny because agencies will, you know, people in generosity and kind-heartedness, they'll collect blankets or clothing or something like that. And a lot of these agencies say, you know what, we get overwhelmed with this stuff and we can't get it distributed. What we need is cash so that we can then get out to these people and buy exactly what they need. And so I can understand it both ways, you know, because sometimes we may not have the cash, but we've got extra warm coats in our closets and we can donate those. And so that's how we want to help. When sometimes that it kind of bottlenecks everything, we don't realize it. But I think that's kind of what he was saying here, too, is, you know, we're going to make this as efficient as we possibly can.
Yeah, right. And it's just like what's happening in Florida now. Mm-hmm. So we want to send stuff to Florida that they may need. The problem is somehow they have to distribute it, and they don't have the means to distribute that
stuff.
And
the infrastructure all set up, yeah.
I mean, I saw a thing on the internet today. They have people who have been taking material, especially medicines and things like that, out to places in North Carolina by mule train because the roads are all gone.
Wow.
So
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
The response that people have. Kim and I weren't in Alaska in 1964 when they had the big earthquake, but I've talked to people that were there, and they were overwhelmed with blankets and tents, and people were sending stuff, and they kind of had way more stuff than they knew what to do with. That it wasn't what they needed. What they needed was money to buy food and medicines and things like that. So, you know, our response to people who have a need has to be appropriate to the need that they have.
One Christmas years ago, they were asked, you know how they do every Christmas, ask for the needy children. This has been years ago. And so I went and got this stuffed animal, and the guy goes, that's all we ever get. So I went back to the cupboard and got
something else. Something else. Yeah.
I had plenty in that cupboard in the hallway, yeah. And I still do.
Yeah.
So.
But I understand it's what people want to do, and you think, well, what would, if I was in that situation, what would I need? And sometimes we don't know very well because we haven't been in that situation. I've never been in a flood like they're going through. So anyway, then there are other people who would turn to a passage like this and say that because he makes this statement that they're contributing because the Gentiles were made partakers of their spiritual things. And so because of that, they had a responsibility to support the Jews. And you people will seize on a passage like this and say, right now, Israel and Jerusalem are going through this difficult time, and as Gentiles, we have a responsibility to support the Jews. And that's not what this passage is about. Okay? So, now, whether we choose to help the Jews or not, or whether we choose to send help to Gaza, people are in dire need in Gaza as well. So I caution you not to kind of get caught up in people saying, well, you have a responsibility to support the Jews.
Well, then tell me what it does mean. You're telling me what it doesn't mean. What does it mean?
What it means in this case, mm-hmm. He's just reminding them that the Jews in Jerusalem had been instrumental in making sure that they got the gospel. And so you ought to respond to that.
That the Gentiles got the gospel.
That the Gentiles got the gospel.
I got it. Okay.
Okay, I'm not getting this in my brain. Their duty is also to minister unto them in carnal things.
Okay.
What? I'm sorry.
Well,
get that.
In the beginning, remember, the first Christians were all Jews.
Okay.
That's where the church began, and for almost 10 years, the church was exclusively a Jewish institution. Okay, and it was those Jews who made it possible for different ministers to go throughout the world teaching the gospel. And he's just reminding them of that.
Is your question about carnal things?
Yeah.
I think that what that means is that they're ministering to them in material goods as well.
Yeah.
Oh,
material,
yes.
Earthly things, not just spiritual. You know, sometimes I've heard a lot of Christians say, well, bearing fruit and helping people, the only help we can give people is to teach them the gospel. We don't give them money, we don't feed them. And I have a really good friend who has said so many times, people cannot receive the gospel if their stomach's growling.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be feeding them. If they're hungry, mm-hmm. feed them. If they're in poverty, help them. And I think that's what he's saying here. Our duty isn't only in spiritual things. It is in spiritual things. But it's also to minister to them in terms of material blessings.
Okay,
so to bless them materially.
Material. So carnal to me meant
I know, yeah, I think it's just the difference between worldly and spiritual.
So you have a different translation.
Yeah, the New American Standard says material.
And mine is New International Version, and it reads, for the Gentiles have shared in the Jews' spiritual blessings. They owe it to the Jews to share with them their material blessings.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we.
You use the King James Version here, and we're not used to reading that anymore.
Yeah, I used the King James.
Because you had the thither to or something in
there. Yeah. But, well, I have the New King James, but...
Thitherward.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to make a bad thing out of it. I just didn't understand that.
Yeah.
Material makes more sense.
Yeah, it does.
You know me. I have to be very...
A lot better translation. Because sometimes we think carnal, that's sinful.
Right.
And in some ways, I mean, it's not spiritual, so it doesn't necessarily mean it's sinful, but it's of the world.
Yeah, it's just the stuff.
But I do think that it recognizes that we have to have the stuff of this world. We have to keep it in proper perspective, obviously. But in order to live, in order to function in this world, we have to have the stuff of the world. That's why we have jobs, so that we can earn income and we can take care of those needs that are rightfully ours, that God has given to us. And so I think that this is a good place to go to say, you can have some concerns for worldly things, for material goods. It is appropriate.
Well, I would think what does it say? If you have a cloak, give them yours give them whatever you have. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But I have over the years heard a lot of Christians just very staunchly almost say, we knew some guy up in Alaska who felt like it was sinful to have more than one pair of pants and more than one shirt and more than one jacket. And you can only wear one thing at a time. So that's it. And he didn't own a home. He didn't. I can't remember if Mike had.
He lived in an apartment that was smaller than this room.
Yeah, and he felt like that was his godly service. He felt like that you needed to shun any material blessings that you might have.
Yeah. He had two pairs of pants and he had two shirts.
I think so, mm-hmm. Something like that.
And. When we first met him, he didn't own a car.
Right.
Yeah. And this was Alaska.
Okay. Yeah. He lived in Fairbanks.
Yeah, in Fairbanks, cold. Alaska. It was like -70.
Ooh.
Yeah. And he
Ooh.
Walked everywhere he
everywhere
went.
Everywhere he went. Oh,
yeah.
And he finally...
But he felt like that was his spiritual service. He felt like that was required of him as a Christian.
Yeah, and he was... He was a really good auto mechanic and made pretty good money, but used it to help other people.
But he's kind of an extreme example. I have heard Christians really kind of put down taking care of people's physical needs.
Yeah.
Anyway, as opposed to their spiritual.
I think the Bible teaches that.
I do too.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's
right. Okay. So let's look at our next passage here. The next one that I have listed is 2 Corinthians 8, 1 through 15. And this is occasioned by the same thing that was going on in Romans 15 that we've read about. This is just a different town. So let's split this one up. Let's see. Why don't somebody read down through verse 10, and then we'll get somebody else to read from 11 through 15. Kind of, that doesn't seem like it, but that's almost in the middle of the
story. I'll read through verse 10.
Okay.
And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able, and even beyond their ability. entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people. And they exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves first of all to the Lord, and then, by the will of God, also to us. So we urged Titus, just as he had earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion of this act of grace on your part. But since you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in the love we have kindled in you, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. I'm not commanding you, but I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for our sake he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich. And here is my judgment about what is best for you in this matter. Last year, you were the first not only to give, but also to have the desire to do so.
I'll read the rest. Now, okay. Finish the work so that your eager willingness to do it may be matched by your completion of it according to your means. For if the willingness is there, but the gift is acceptable according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. Our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn, their plenty will supply what you need. The goal is equality. As it is written, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little.
Okay. He says it is written, he that gathered much didn't have too much. That has to do with gathering manna when the children of Israel were in the wilderness. And he said, go out and gather manna every day, every morning. You gathered the manna. You gathered twice as much on Friday as you did on Thursday, so that you wouldn't gather on the Sabbath day, on Saturday. And that then they had what they needed. So what do you observe in this? What do you see in this?
Well, he didn't want them to give up more than what was going to be comfortable for them. They needed to keep enough for themselves, but they wanted them to share and
right.
So others would have.
Right.
They need it.
So according to their means.
Yes.
Okay. What else do you see? And in some cases, they went beyond their means. Mm-hmm. You know, they really wanted to help. And these people in Corinth were by no means wealthy. It wasn't like, who is it? I just saw today, somebody donated $5 million. Oh, it's
Taylor Swift
donated $5 million to the people in the hurricane area. And I'm thinking, that's a huge donation, but when you've got more money than you know what to do with, $5 million is just kind of, okay.
Dolly Parton shared, too.
$1 million,
yeah.
It's kind of chump change.
Yeah. Well,
I don't mean it's chunk change, but
just their, be dismissive of their contribution.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The thing I saw here that I really liked was verses 3 and 4.
Yeah.
He said, they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. Entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing this service to the Lord's people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we view giving and we view helping other people as a privilege, as something that we are blessed to be able to do, I think that really changes our perspective. I've heard the saying, give until it hurts. I'm like, give until it feels good. You know, because really, It does. Once you get to a certain point, yeah, it might hurt a little bit because you don't have that much money and you're trying to give beyond your means. But in the end, the blessings come back to you. And I think he says this too. And you don't give to receive. You don't give right. So that you get the blessings. But you are blessed. Even if it's just that wonderful feeling that you have that you were able to do something, however small it might be, that you have the privilege of being able to bless someone.
Yeah.
It is a privilege, I think.
It is.
Those were my favorite verses.
I know, I like that.
Yeah.
That really jumped out at me when I read it, because I thought, I can relate to that. It's a privilege to be able to serve.
And I think Christians here have been very giving.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of situations that we've helped in the Philippines when they had difficulty with weather and the Barnabas baskets that we put together and gave to people who may not have had a physical need, but they had a spiritual need to just be appreciated.
Yeah, and it made a lot of people feel good.
Yeah.
It made them feel really part of the congregation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're almost the kind of the everyday thing, and I'm going to brag on Vicki a little bit. I just love Vicki's heart for service and that she is willing to, organize the meals and step in when somebody has a need. She recognizes that need right away. That takes a special gift to feel like you can bless people in that way. And we need somebody to organize that and to help us. And Vicki has stepped into that, and she does such a great job of it. And so I'm just going to brag on her for a minute.
You don't need to do that.
I know I don't need to, but I hope that you are enjoying the privilege of sharing that service.
I am. It's fun. I just, yes.
It's a lot of work, but it's a labor of love.
It is.
Yeah.
You are right.
Yeah.
And it's not always giving stuff. Sometimes it's just helping somebody out where you can. Like, I think about Sharon, having to run a farm while she's taking care of Sarah and her mom, and goodness only knows she doesn't want me out there trying to help her run a farm because I don't know what I'm doing. And I would be.
But Faye went out there and gave medication to the sheep and stuff. Because Faye was raised by a shepherdess. She knew what she was doing.
I can't do that. And Kim can't do that. But Kim goes and picks up Sarah and takes Sarah and, goes to get lunch and gives Sharon a little bit of a break. That's what Kim does.
I feel privileged that Sarah will go with me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. She won't even say hello to me.
Well, hey.
I try.
Yeah, you try. She has to really know you, but she's funny.
Yeah,
I'm taking her bowling tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
I got you.
Well, we'll see.
You know how Sarah always gives gifts to.
Yeah.
She always gives a gift to Kim and me and Ron.
Ron Harrison, yes.
And to Nicole and to Kylie.
Right.
So there are a few people.
So anyway, she gave me a gift Sunday and I laid it down on the pew and she came and got it and gave it to somebody.
Isn't that hilarious?
But she gets such great joy out of being able to do that and give this little gift to people.
Yeah.
And
I think that is just the pure innocence and the purity of exactly what Paul is talking about. Her love language is giving gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can all be like that, that our love language, that's how we express ourselves to people, is by making sure that they're given Not, I mean, hers is gifts, but that we are meeting their needs.
Well, just through happiness always is such a gift to everybody.
It is a
I
gift,
think.
Yeah, it is a gift.
It's great.
Yeah, she's a kick.
Yeah, she really is. And sometimes we need to be kind of not prodded, that's not the right word, to reminded that you wanted to do this, so let's kind of get on the ball and let's get this done and get everything taken care of.
And that's probably what he was telling them.
Yeah, I don't think he was prodding them. He says that he was going to, let's see, to test the earnestness of their faith. And we think of the word test in a bad way.
It was a challenge.
Yeah, it was kind of a challenge. I don't think that that's what it is. He's saying, I want you to prove it. I want you to know that you've done what you wanted to do. And in the same way that Abraham's faith was tested, we're going to give you the opportunity to really show what you're all about.
And sometimes to show it to yourself. I think that what Paul was doing here was giving them a gift. Of saying, I'm going to give you this opportunity to demonstrate to yourself your faith.
Right.
So.
And of course, the ultimate gift came from Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he makes that point. And he makes that point in a lot of other places as well. Philippians, he says, Jesus thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation. Came to this earth, gave us the ultimate gift, was willing to give himself. I mean, above and beyond what you think of as being a reasonable gift, Jesus went to the unreasonable level. Okay. So let's look at Acts 4. And this
is on the back side?
Yeah. Okay. Is it on the back side of yours?
Yeah,
it's on the back
side.
I printed mine.
Okay.
Big enough so that I could read it. It's on page 5. Okay. I hate to say that, but old eyes don't read 12-point type as well.
I like that big print myself. Yeah. That's why I print large. I do all caps on Facebook, and I never knew it was yelling, but
now
I guess everybody is used to it.
There's Eileen yelling at us again.
Who wants to read chapter 4, 32 through 37? Let's see, Jane, have you got that? You're muted, Jane.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's Acts 32?
No, Acts 4.
Okay. Acts 4, 32 through 37?
Yes.
Okay. So, all the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions were their own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. And God's grace was so powerfully at work in them all, that there was no needy person among them. For from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the feet of the apostles, and it was distributed to anyone who had need. Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, sold a field he owned and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet.
Okay, so what do you see in this one? Well, first of all, what occasioned this this great need?
Well, people had come from all over for the feast, for the Pentecost, for for the feast, and so there were people who didn't live there, and they stayed because they started listening to the apostles. They wanted to know more and learn more about Jesus. I mean, at this point, Jesus had resurrected, and I guess this was the talk. Everybody was talking about this, and so then Peter stood up and preached that first sermon, and I think that people's interest was really piqued. So rather than go home, they stayed there so they could learn more. They didn't have Bibles. They didn't have churches to meet in. They didn't have all of that yet. The church had not yet been established. And so they were trying to learn as much as they could before they took off and went back home. And so there are just all these people there. And at some point, your money runs out. At some point, you need help. And the people who had, they went above and beyond. I mean, I don't think that we're asked under normal circumstances to sell our property and give the money to someone else. I say normal circumstances, there might be occasion that we would be called upon to do that. I don't know, but these people felt like they were, and it seems to me, every sense, and then you get into later a different story, but in every sense except that one, people willingly sold their property and willingly gave this money. Barnabas apparently was a very wealthy individual, and it seems like he willingly sold a field he owned. It didn't necessarily mean it was the only thing he owned, but he sold that field, and then he brought the proceeds so that they could be distributed among all of these people who were there who needed some kind of assistance. But I love the part where it says no one had need. I mean, they met the need so well that no one was left with a need.
Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable. I don't know how many people would have been there at that time. What's the estimate? How many people would have been in Jerusalem for Pentecost at that time?
According to Josephus, something like 8.5 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
No, I don't know that they were caring for everybody in Jerusalem.
Who knows?
But you had 3,000 people that had become Christians.
Had become Christians, yeah.
And they no doubt needed help.
Right.
And then you find later that they were helping Hebrew Christians, Hebrew widows,
right,
more than they were Greek widows.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to remember,
human nature sneaks in.
Yeah, they had a problem with racism, just like we have problems with racism. And the Jews had a tendency to not, they felt like if you lived outside of Jerusalem and Judea, maybe, and you didn't speak Hebrew, that you weren't as devoted to God. And so there were Jews that lived in every nation under heaven, but they kind of let that get in the way. And then they corrected it, to their credit, Came up, the apostle said, we need to appoint some people to make sure that we minister to everybody that has need, and that was Acts 6. So, people came there. They didn't have Bibles, so they couldn't go back home. They wanted to learn something about Jesus. They were going to have to stay there where the apostles were. And so they stayed. Something like, during the this period, Josephus says that the population of Jerusalem would swell to about 8.5 million. That's as many people as live in New York today. And Jerusalem is not that big. So this is a major undertaking to do this. Anything else that you see here? So I don't think he's saying the church is a communist economy, where if you become a part of the church, you immediately forfeit all of your goods to the church, and the church will then distribute those goods as you have need. That's not what was going on. That's the way some people kind of abused this passage, but that's not what was going on.
Yeah, I had a lady tell me one time, the more you give, the more God will bless you. But she meant, she didn't, it was, you know, the more money you give, the more God will bless you. I could thank God.
You can't buy God's blessings.
Well, that treats giving as an investment.
Right. Yeah.
And I think what we'll see when we kind of conclude this discussion in several weeks is the more you give, the more God will discipline you. And so if you're good at doing this, expect God to expect more. It's a really kind of an interesting conundrum.
Not necessarily money, but more of us living it and helping our brothers and sisters in any way we can.
Yeah.
Not necessarily monetarily.
Yeah. And I think this church does a pretty good job of recognizing when people have a need, stepping up and helping them with the need, and doing what we can. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily have to be money.
Just a phone call could mean a lot.
Yeah. Sure. I know for a long time, Kim, that when the girls were little, we had a 4-bedroom house and we had people that lived with us. We eventually stopped doing that because the girls got a little bigger and it was something that we couldn't do. But at a time, there were times when we could do that, and we did it a lot. We had people that lived with us. Sometimes it worked out and sometimes it didn't work out. But that's just...
Boy, do we have stories.
Yeah, we could tell stories. Okay, so let's kind of finish this up with Galatians 6 at verse 10. Somebody want to read that one? Dylan, you want to read that one?
Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers.
Okay. So what do you see in this passage?
Every opportunity we have, when it's given to us, to do it. And especially to the family of believers. But, I know Kim helps her neighbors, and we each do our thing by helping others. But we primarily want to... Well, I shouldn't use the word primarily, but we do want to help our brothers and sisters in Christ.
Right. So.
And I think God expects that.
Right. Right. And you know, Kim is really good about identifying people that have had a hard time, and she makes bread or, you know. And it's not anything real big. It's just make sure that they know that we care and that we're there. And,
but like Guy said, even a phone call or a card or cards, or Becky's good at hugging and other times, but Becky's always hugging.
But it,
You know, I mean, it makes people feel good when you...
Yeah, when you're alone at your house for every day, it's really nice to get those hugs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember when we were going through COVID and Vicki would drive around with cupcakes. Bring you cupcakes. And that was really neat. She didn't get out of the car and she didn't hug anybody, but she did give you a cupcake.
I think sometimes we focus on the, especially for those who belong to the family of believers, and I think sometimes we miss the point where he's really saying, do good to all people.
Right, yeah. Right.
Do good to all people. Don't make a distinction. Don't make a distinction. But I think that this falls along the same thing that in 1 Timothy, when he says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than unbelievers. So I think he's saying your first responsibility is to that family, to your spiritual family. That's your first responsibility. Don't forget that. But that doesn't mean that you don't do good to everyone. And that's sometimes hard for me to remember, that he has designed me and has created me and sustains me to do good work. And I don't think he puts a caveat on that. Do good to all people. It's sometimes hard. It's sometimes hard when there's some pretty unlovable people out there to love them anyway. Really, seriously. I mean,
I know.
You know, I mean, we drove around in a kind of a rough section of town today, and we're like, ooh, walk north, you know. And that doesn't mean that I don't love those people, but I don't have a relationship with them. Maybe I should. Maybe as a Christian, that's what I'm expected to do. I don't know. But if I am in contact with them, I need to be loving and expressing myself in a loving manner and caring for them and doing good for them, trying to figure out how to meet their needs. And it's hard for me to kind of keep that in perspective. But I think what his command is here, he says, therefore, as we have opportunity, do good to all people. Mm-hmm. Do good to all men. That's your job as a Christian, is to show love and compassion and do good works to all men.
I remember Jocelyn used to carry a bag of apples in her car, and of course you're not supposed to give people anything anymore, but and she would give an apple, and Sharon put a small Bible and an apple and something in the bag, and if she'd see somebody, she'd hand it to them. And, you know,
she had a friend in Spokane who would go to Costco or one of those stores and get like a case of the small bottles of water, the 8-ounce bottles of water, and then she'd make a new label for it and just put a cup of cold water in his name and write that on there, and then put the address, the name and the address of the church and her contact information, and she would hand that out to homeless people all the time. And so she just had them in the back seat of her car, so she ran into people, she would just go get and say, here's a cup of cold water in his name. You know, I just thought that was really a sweet way to do it. It's a great way to, you know, and sometimes she would get cursed at because they're only getting 8 ounces of water and they wanted something more. But I just thought that was a great ministry that she just took on herself.
Right.
I think that was sweet.
I know there's a group of girls in Sutherland that I know, well, they're women, but they all like to cook, and they have a little store that I was telling you about, and friends.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
But every Friday, evidently there's a homeless camp in Sutherland, and every Friday they take them some form of food, sandwiches or whatever, and they cook, or soup or whatever, and I don't know how many's there, I don't remember, but they take them every Friday, they take them food.
The church in Spokane, one of the things that our teens did, I think probably every week, is they got together and they made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, just tons of them, and put them in bags, and they went under the bridges and handed them out to people. Yeah, it was really sweet.
That was very sweet. I don't know that I could do that.
Yeah.
That's not my thing.
Well, they did it, and they...
I might throw it out the window.
And some adults went with them, and they ended up... We actually taught several people the gospel, and... Some kind of backfire. There's a reason some people live on the street. Anyway, so if you have a ministry like that, just beware that you are welcoming people into your midst, right?
Right.
And sometimes people come with a lot of troubles, but that doesn't mean they're any less valuable and any less
Christ's
precious.
Christ died for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So they're just as precious, but it's just a challenge. So sometimes it's a challenge to kind of meet this standard, I think, to do good to all men. And I want to bear fruit. I want to live my life to be more Christ-like all the time and to bear fruit every day. I want to be closer to God. But some of these commands are a real challenge for me. I want to be a loving person. I want to do good to all people. And it's hard.
But it is hard sometimes.
I think so.
It is.
Sometimes.
I
know that thing you put on Facebook about Christians, you know, and I thought, I've had to be real careful. I've been really careful what I'm saying from now.
You know, and when I do that, and especially in the political season and that kind of thing, I'm not saying that we shouldn't discuss policy and we shouldn't discuss, you know, all of that, because we're American citizens too. But I think we sometimes lose sight. I see sometimes some Christians put some horrendous things on there that I don't think should ever come from a Christian. I don't think you have. my point is, I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact, especially in this hyped up political season, that we're citizens of a different kingdom.
Right.
We might have some temporary residency here, and I'm an American citizen, and I value that. I value our country. I value what we stand for, generally. But my citizenship is somewhere else, and I need to keep that in perspective. That's just me. I'm talking too much.
Well, we have an opinion, but we don't necessarily have to put it on Facebook. I think we can.
The problem with social media like that is it's not a robust enough sort of a media in order to really discuss the differences.
Right.
And so we reduce it to memes and we reduce it to just ugliness. And, you know, I've seen some people compare, like, somebody's physical characteristics with some, I just think that it just gets to be where we lose sight of the fact that we should have an opinion about policy and about those kinds of things and the laws and stuff, that we lose sight of it sometimes.
Well, and we shouldn't. Meaning me too, not get caught up in the political thing with non-Christians. Not that they're not nice people, but, you know, you can get a mob mentality real quick.
Mm-hmm.